Stay tuned for a message from Facebook after the show.
I think it's very easy to ignore.
175 cases today alone, traced back to one farm and a third of its workers.
It's so easy to forget that there are so many individuals that are picking your food, that are packaging your food, because that's not something that a majority of America ever really encounters.
Among the essential workers still on the job, farm workers who pick and process our fruits and vegetables.
I'm from Boise, Idaho, so I grew up in Nampa, which is about 20 minutes out, and it's a lot more rural. My high school was 50% Latino, and so that's been something that's very proximal to me. But the majority of people don't live in areas like that.
Farm workers know the risks of continuing to work during a pandemic, but in an industry where most don't have sick leave, they can't afford the time off.
These conditions have existed before. There have been awful working conditions, but it's really easy that if you're not around it, to ignore it, to block it out of your sight, because that's what we've been doing for decades.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch, and today, Ximena Bustillo on how years of safety problems for farm workers in America have culminated in a coronavirus disaster for the country's agricultural communities.
So since the pandemic has started in February and March, a lot of advocates had been sounding the alarm that poor conditions, lack of information, in general, close quarters, working conditions, living conditions, was going to create the perfect conditions for a coronavirus disaster. There was going to be outbreaks, there was going to be a lack of access to testing, a lack of access to PPE, and no one seemed to listen anywhere.
Well, Chris, 8 workers have died here of COVID. 358 have tested positive for the illness, and that's why Merced County is ordering this plant closed.
This resulted in many outbreaks across the country. We focus predominantly on Oregon, Washington, Arizona, California, and then some states along the eastern seaboard as well. But it's not just in those states. It's in many states across the country where the areas that grow the most fruits and vegetables also happen to be the areas with the most amount of COVID cases. And a lot of that's coming from these farm worker outbreaks.
Why are farm workers particularly vulnerable here?
There's a lot of reasons, and I won't be the first to tell you that these conditions have been awful since before the pandemic, and the pandemic only exacerbated them. They often live in very close, tight quarters. They don't have access to safe drinking water. They can't use bathroom breaks or take sick leave. And even if they can, they're threatened against it. They're threatened that they'll lose their jobs. They opt not to take them. And that's kind of what's created this snowballing mess.
About half of America's farm workers are undocumented. Is it more difficult for undocumented workers to get the help they need or even to say, like, get a test to find out if they're positive for coronavirus?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the constant threat of deportation has driven a lot of these workers already into hiding. That's something we heard from a lot of our advocate sources. They are afraid that if they go and get tested or if they seek medical care, they'll be deported. And that's something that's the case for undocumented immigrants. Individuals are afraid to go and get tested, go and give their name, where they work, their information, if they even have access to that at all.
What sort of regulation is there for agricultural work during the pandemic? Like, does the federal government have rules in place to help protect workers and prevent the spread of the virus?
Yes. So after a lot of advocates asked the CDC to create some form of recommendation specific to farm workers, they did back in June. that explains how employers should protect their workers, take temperature checks, allow for 6-foot distancing when possible. But the Labor Department, which can make these regulations mandatory, has not done so. And the OSHA regulations are also not mandatory. So a lot of these guidelines are only recommendations, and that's just at the federal level. At the state level, there are quite a few states that have some kind of regulation, but again, they're only recommendations. In Ohio, that's a really great example as to where there has been mandates for a lot of other industries. So we mentioned casinos, gyms, salons, golf courses have very strict ways in which they need to operate. And if they don't operate, they can't be in business. But there's no requirements whatsoever for how farms need to operate and how they need to treat their workers or how their workers should operate. And so that's kind of the difference here, is you have two different operations, like business operations, and one has a very clear, strict way of how it must work, and the other one doesn't.
Have you spoken to individual farm workers or their families?
Yes, I did.
What are you hearing from them about their situations and their concerns?
I'm hearing that they're terrified. I spoke to a lady out in Yolo County, California, who was afraid of getting sick, afraid of bringing it home to her children, but she needed to work and she needed to go anyways. And a lot of them are afraid of demanding more from their employers, asking for sanitary safety conditions or asking for different shift changes so that there are less people in a space at the same time. Diana Hernandez is a junior at Valdosta State University, and she also over the summer has been working picking fruit out in the fields of Georgia. And she's not a stranger to farm work. Her mother and father also did it previously when they lived in Florida, and her father still travels to Florida to plant trees from November to March every single year. And she says that it's normal to her. She's seen how farm workers will skip breaks. They'll come in sick just to ensure that they can meet certain picking quotas that will earn them basically a living wage. And so her concern has always been, even if a lot of these individuals are citizens, or even if they are undocumented, they're still working, they're still providing and picking the food. And the way she put it was, if we don't even get Labor Day, if we don't even get a holiday that we deserve, then much less do we ever get additional pay for our contributions. They don't get sick leave, they don't get anything that might alleviate an already bad situation during the pandemic.
What steps can be taken either at the federal level or at the state level or even at individual farms to try to help with this situation?
At the state level and at the federal level, the most basic thing that can be done is to mandate these recommendations or these guidelined regulations that are not being enforced. And then once you mandate them, actually follow through and enforce them. Make sure that you actually have hand washing stations like you're supposed to. Make sure that temperature checks and PPE is actually being given out. You know, if you can do that for a golf course, if you can do that for a casino, you should be able to do that for where your food is coming from, for those that are picking your food for your meal the next day. It shouldn't be a hard ask. It shouldn't be a difficult ask to have these regulations when, you know, we need them in every other industry. They should be mandated to protect individuals that are very clearly being disproportionately affected at high rates.
Jimena Bustillo, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you for having me.
Also today, still no deal on another round of coronavirus relief, but Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says the Senate will vote on a trimmed-down Republican package later this week. McConnell released the roughly $500 billion measure on Tuesday as senators came back to Washington for a short session ahead of the election. calling it a, quote, targeted proposal that focuses on several of the most urgent aspects of this crisis, including school aid, more funding for vaccines and testing, and another round of cash for small business loans. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer say the measure doesn't come close to addressing the problems and is headed nowhere. They want a significantly larger bill, including hundreds of billions of dollars for state and local governments, help for renters, and more jobless benefits. And President Trump is expanding a moratorium on oil drilling in Florida. In a decision that took the energy industry by surprise on Tuesday, Trump announced that a moratorium on drilling off Florida's Gulf Coast that was set to expire in 2022 will be extended and broadened to include the state's Atlantic coast and the coast of Georgia and South Carolina. The move comes despite vows by decades of Republican presidents, including Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush, and Trump himself, to open up more of the U.S. coast to drilling. It marks a big win for drilling opponents in Florida, where Trump is hoping to win over key swing state voters ahead of the November election. Subscribe to Politico Dispatch wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, check out some of our other shows like Nerdcast, Women Rule, Politico Energy, and Pulse Check. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.
Small businesses are the foundation of our communities. And right now, they're facing extraordinary challenges. That's why at Facebook, we've expanded our support to help businesses adapt and grow online while many of their doors remain closed. If you're a business owner or know someone who is, visit facebook.com/resource for free tools and resources to help adapt to today's environment. That's facebook.com/resource.